December 7th, 1941, our land of freedom was defied. December 8th, 1941, Uncle Sam replied.
We did it before and we can do it again, and we will do it again.
We've got a heck of a job to do, but you can bet that we'll see it through.
We did it before and we can do it again, and we will do it again.
We're one for all and we're all for one, they'll get a licking before.
Hi, this is Alan Chartok. To most Americans, December 7th, 1941 is synonymous with one event, the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. But how did it sound to those American citizens who were sitting by their radios enjoying an otherwise uneventful day? Well, back with us again to discuss another incredible moment in American history and how that day sounded to the millions who were transfixed by their radios is Dr. Ivan Steen. Dr. Ivan Steen has been on the faculty at the University of Albany for more than 45 years and currently serves as Vincent O'Leary Associate Professor of History. He's also co-director of the Center for Applied Historical Research. Dr. Steen has conducted oral history interviews with radio performers from the 40s and 50s and has taught a course on the Golden Age of Radio. Today, Dr. Steen will take us on a tour through several selections from the radio broadcasts of December 7th, 1941. Welcome back, Ivan.
Hi, Alan. Well, you know, as you said, it was people sitting at home on a Sunday and may well have had the radio on. They might have been listening to NBC, and if they were, a few minutes after a news flash came across to the NBC studios from Associated Press, NBC then went and checked with the U.S. government, and they put this bulletin out.
From the NBC newsroom in New York, President Roosevelt said in a statement today that the Japanese have attacked the Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, from the air. I'll repeat that. President Roosevelt says that the Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor in Hawaii from the air. This bulletin came to you from the NBC newsroom in New York.
Well, perhaps they weren't listening to NBC. They might have actually been listening to a football game on the radio. And some of us may actually remember that there were two major football teams in New York City that had a great rivalry, just as the baseball teams by the same name did. There were the Brooklyn Dodgers football team, and there were the New York Giants football team, and a game was on just at that time, and it got interrupted.
Here's the whistle. Merle Condon comes up. He boots it. It's a long one down to around the three-yard line. Ward Cup takes it. He's cutting up to his left. He's over the 10. Nice block there by Lehman. Cup's still going. He's up to the 25, and now he's hit and hit hard about the 27-yard line. Bruiser Kennard made the tackle.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington. The White House announces Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Stay tuned to WOR for further developments, which will be broadcast immediately as received.
WOR, of course, was the flagship station in New York City for Mutual Broadcasting System, which actually was the largest radio network at the time. Other people may well have been listening to CBS, and if they were, they also would have gotten a bulletin about the war.
The World Today. By shortwave radio, Columbia now brings you reports from its foreign correspondents overseas with summaries of the latest world news presented over these stations by Golden Eagle Gasoline. Go ahead, New York.
The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air, President Roosevelt has just announced. The attack also was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu.
That's really an interesting little piece. Actually, CBS was due to have that news program on anyway, and the war broke out just right for them. The reason that piece is so interesting is the whole controversy over whether that little piece that John Daly actually was coming up with was the original broadcast or later broadcast, and nobody seems to be able to figure that one out. They know he actually did come on and do it, but the actual audio clip may well have been recorded later, but who knows?
You know, I've been thinking about something. I once saw a program on this one which they showed a soap opera, I think it was on NBC, being interrupted. And the next day, the soap opera was on again. But since soap operas are sequential, I often wondered whether people were left scratching their heads wondering what happened the day before, and they were live, I believe.
They were live, but I don't think they would have had a problem if you listen to soap operas, which is torturous. But if you listen to soap operas, the beginning of every episode, they recap what happened in the last episode.
Oh, interesting.
Which is marvelous, because they were only 15-minute programs. So they did a recap, and then at the end, they would tell you what to think about for the next program, and there were also
Will
ads.
John kiss Ann?
Right. Yes, yeah. And there were also ads, so you really didn't have very much new material on any given day in a soap opera.
Well, we do know, Ivan, that there are times when people get news flashes, and they're watching something else, and they're really ticked off about it. There's no real evidence that that happened with the Japanese invading Pearl Harbor.
I can't imagine that anyone would have thought they really should have been listening to their soap opera. Well, of course, it was Sunday and there weren't any soap operas on, but their football game or whatever it was.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask you about was Americans were not told right away how bad it was, how many people had died, how many ships had been sunk. And it took a little while for that news to get out. In fact, I remember reading that Winston Churchill had wanted to go because the British ports were being bombed also, that Winston Churchill had said to the president that he was going to go ahead and make the announcement and he was going to beat the president to the punch, and that the result of that was that Churchill ignored the president, pretended he never got the thing or never got the thing, and went ahead and did get there before President Roosevelt.
Yes, he did declare war before, but the situation is a little different in England and the United States. The prime minister could declare war in the United States. The president couldn't until he went to Congress. So there was no way he could do that. But
well, Roosevelt asked him to hold back until he went to Congress, and he said no. He didn't say anything. They just, quote, didn't get the message.
Well, that was also coming across, and also the news of the casualties, because part of the problem was they really didn't know how many instantly, and you're going to hear different things coming out here. It really took a while to just figure it all out. So I don't think there was any deliberate attempt, because as we listen to some of these broadcasts, they are talking about numbers, but it's only what they had at that time. If we move on, the next one's a really interesting broadcast. This comes from Honolulu, Hawaii, radio station KGU, which was the first report from Hawaii that we were getting on this. What's very interesting about this, and they didn't know it at the time, the broadcast from that station was being used as a beacon for the Japanese planes that were coming in, and they really didn't know that, at least when they were doing it. So they were kind of honing in on Honolulu by the signal coming out of the radio station broadcast tower.
Yeah.
But let's listen to that. I think it's a really interesting thing to hear because it's while it's happening.
Go ahead, Honolulu.
The island of Oahu in the Pacific, one of the most thickly populated islands of the Hawaiian group, was attacked by Japanese planes this morning, starting at about 8 o'clock. No one would believe when reports emanated from the two radio stations here that the islands had been attacked. But when bombs began falling in various parts of the city and in different Army and Navy posts and bases, people knew Japan was endeavoring to eradicate America's outpost in the Pacific. Now, here's a report that I've gathered from different reporters of the Honolulu Advertiser who've been out endeavoring to get information concerning the Japanese air attack on the island of Oahu in the Hawaiian Islands. The first information in Honolulu that planes of Japan were attacking the islands was about 8 o'clock this morning, Hawaiian time. The first group of Japanese airplanes attacked Ford Island at Pearl Harbor, the Navy's mighty fortress in the islands. Roy Batusik, a local attorney, was up in his private plane flying over Cocoa Head when he said one or two Japanese planes gave him a salute of machine gun bullets as they approached the city. The plane was slightly damaged, and Mr. Batusik made a landing. After machine gunning Ford Island, the first Japanese planes moved to Hickam Field. Observers said considerable damage was done to planes and to Hickam Field. There is great activity there now in clearing the field of debris. At Pearl Harbor, where is based the Pacific Fleet, three ships were attacked. The Oklahoma was set afire. All lines of communication seemed to be down between the various Army posts and Navy airdromes and Army airfields. There has been no statement made by the Navy. The Army has issued orders for all people, the civilian population, to remain off the streets. The first raiders carried torpedoes and did their damage to shipping in Pearl Harbor and off Honolulu. Everyone here in the islands were taken by surprise by the attack, and even yet it's difficult for some people to believe that our air raid on these beautiful islands has actually happened and that lives have been lost. Several planes have been shot down, and anti-aircraft gunnery is very heavy. It is thought that the planes came from the south in the direction of the island of Kauai. After the attack on Pearl Harbor, Hickam Field and Wheeler Field, several squadrons of Japanese planes came in from the south over Diamond Head, dropping bombs and incendiary bombs over the city. One bomb dropped in front of the governor's mansion at Washington Place and killed one man. Another dropped by the Honolulu Advertiser, nearly hitting several people and almost reaching its mark. At Pacific Heights and Dowsett Highlands, beautiful residential districts, there was heavy bombing. One woman was killed in Dowsett Highlands. The governor has proclaimed a state of emergency. Traffic is almost at a standstill in parts of the city. However, the traffic to and from Waikiki seems to be normal. When planes, Japanese planes, appeared over Waikiki, there were many people out in the streets and watched the bombing there. One man at Waikiki was badly injured when a bomb dropped in the heart of that beach resort. The Japanese planes seem to have come over the city and the environs with no intimation whatsoever that these were Japanese planes. And it was a very difficult for people here to believe that these were Japanese planes. Here's a report that just came from Hickam Field. There were 350 men killed in a direct bomb hit on the barracks at Hickam Field. Then at Bellows Field, on the other side of the island, on the windward side of the islands, the field was bombed very heavily. That's all the news from Honolulu now. We'll be back with more news at a later time. This is KGU in Honolulu, Hawaii.
You know, Ivanstein, I was just fascinated by the word Japanese, mm-hmm. because as you'll remember, later in the war, everything were the Japs.
Right.
The Japs were coming, but I guess in the initial shock, there was still a certain amount of respectful language being used.
Yeah, well, it gets worse, of course.
Yeah, sure.
Also, this is a program coming from Honolulu, which would have had a lot more Japanese in its population, and perhaps that has something to do with it. I really don't know beyond that. But it's quite a good report because it gives a lot of detail about what was going on in Honolulu, people hearing it directly coming in from there. So, I mean, that's far away for a lot of people, but this gave them a kind of a closeness to it. And you notice they're giving some casualty numbers.
And the way this guy gives the casualty numbers is very matter-of-factly, not a lot of passion. This was not the Hindenburg blowing up and say, oh, my God, this kind of thing. So 350 people were killed in a barracks. That's quite something.
Well, that's one of the things I've noticed in listening to almost all of these reports. Reporters are very matter-of-fact about everything. I mean, this is really major stuff going on, and they're just, I guess it's being what those days would have been very professional about everything and just giving their reports without any intimations of anything else. What's interesting here, too, is that a lot of planes came over Pearl Harbor. I read somewhere something like 300 and some odd Japanese aircraft. They had to use 6 aircraft carriers to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, that could never happen. Sure. You could not move 6 or even 1 aircraft carrier without everybody knowing with satellite surveillance. So, yes, you could do it back then, but you couldn't do it today. We would have thought something was definitely up if 6 Japanese aircraft carriers were all moving at once.
But I was also, Ivanstein, taken with this business about we didn't know they were Japanese planes. Mm-hmm. In fact, there have been some reports about people waving to the planes when they were coming over thinking that they were from the airbase.
Yes. They were expecting some planes coming over, which is why when some radio operator, I guess, cited this or had some intimation of it, the officer in charge said, no, we're expecting a group of planes over, so it's probably all okay. And the warning didn't go out right then. So nobody really expected that. I think one of the most interesting of the clips we have here is the next one, where a reporter for that radio station in Honolulu climbed on the top of the building they mentioned before, the Advertiser, the newspaper building, got a telephone up there and called NBC to report on the attack as he was watching it.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special broadcast. Here's the bulletin. Washington, the president decided today after Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor and Manila to call an extraordinary meeting of the cabinet for 8:30 p.m. tonight and to have congressional leaders of both parties join the conference at 9 p.m. And now we take you to Honolulu.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. first hearing, or...
One moment, please.
1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, NBC. Hello, NBC. This is KGU in Honolulu, Hawaii. I am speaking from the roof of the Advertiser Publishing Company building. We have witnessed this morning a distant view, a brief battle off Pearl Harbor, and a severe bombing of Pearl Harbor by enemy planes, undoubtedly Japanese. The city of Honolulu has also been attacked and considerable damage done. This battle has been going on for nearly 3 hours. One of the bombs dropped within 50 feet of KGU Tower. It is no joke. It is a real war. The public of Honolulu has been advised to keep in their homes and await results from the Army and Navy. There has been fierce fighting going on in the air and on the sea. Heavy shooting seems to be 1, 2, 3, 4. Just a moment, we'll interrupt you. We cannot estimate yet how much damage has been done, but it has been a very severe attack. The Navy and Army appear now to have the air and the sea under control.
Just a minute. We only have a discussion, please. This is the telephone company, the fifth operator.
Yes.
We try to get through on an emergency call. Could you tell us?
Well, we're talking to New York now.
One moment, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're standing by for further word from Honolulu, and we expect to rejoin them in just a moment.
Now, this is a particularly interesting thing. First of all, the sound quality is terrible. The reason for that, of course, he's on the telephone outside. There's wind blowing, all kinds of action going on.
Hey, Ivan, I've been there many times, as our producer David Gustina could tell you. Even to this day, telephones outside don't do very well on the radio.
That's right. So we have that problem, of course. But the most, I think, amazing thing about this is that he gets interrupted by the telephone operator. Yeah, they want the line, and they cut him off just as he is reporting on the action, talking to NBC in New York. I guess we could call this bureaucracy gone wild, where the operator's supposed to cut in, and she just talks in her matter-of-fact voice, and we're cutting you off. We don't care who you're talking to, basically. But it is really, really amazing. And this guy climbed up there, got the phone, and called him up. So it's really one of the best reports we have early on, coming right out of the zone where it's happening. Well, we move from there to listening to a commentator who was very, very important at the time, Walter Winchell. Walter Winchell was probably the most influential news commentator of his day. An interesting character, never got beyond the sixth grade in school, started out in vaudeville, kind of backed his way into doing a news broadcast. Very opinionated, often wrong, but didn't seem to mind that. He could get away with it. Listened to by just incredible numbers of people, and for a very long time, from the 1930s up into the 50s. Originally a very strong supporter of Franklin Roosevelt and criticized for that. And then in the post-war years, started supporting Senator McCarthy and his red baiting. It's just kind of an odd transition that takes place, but certainly a very, very important person. And here is his commentary on the events that day.
The Department of Justice is moving rapidly to intern all Japanese nationals. The city of New York has already ordered all Japanese nationals to remain off the street. Wartime decrees are slated for emergency passage this week. This will mobilize the efforts of the whole American people. The Japanese property in the United States will be seized at once. The Japanese naval effort tonight is unsound, both naval and land. The Chinese today inform Washington that General Chiang Kai-shek will launch a 4-million-man counteroffensive. All Chinese Blue Armies are intact, and with proper material, Chiang Kai-shek is prepared to support the Russian front. Russia has over 800,000 crack troops poised in the maritime provinces on the Pacific. Official Washington tonight regards Tokyo as authored by Berlin. and all-out effort by the Axis in Africa and Russia is a certainty. The Axis' objective is to leave Great Britain and the United States entirely isolated by next spring. The importance of the Japanese attack is that war between the United States and Hitler is imminent. The national emergency is no longer a phrase. Persons who arouse suspicion by their conduct, each or T, are inviting microscopic examination, perhaps prison. Nothing matters anymore now except national security.
Well, does that remind you of anything?
It certainly does. And notice he's a reporter who is not very matter-of-fact in the way he is talking. I mean, there's a lot of passionate excitement and everything, which is probably what made Winchell so very popular, too, because he really put a lot of his own personality into the reporting. But in New York City, in fact, and there is a clip available of Fiorello LaGuardia, who was mayor at the time, ordering Japanese nationals to stay indoors.
Interesting, Ivanstein, because we didn't do that with the Italians who we're going to be going to war with later on, or the German population, but we did do it with the Japanese. And of course, the Japanese in the end got bombed. There was an A-bomb, and many people in Japan are convinced that that A-bomb was just an absolute message. You don't mess with the United States on something like that.
Yeah. Of course, it would have been a lot harder to order Germans and Italians off the streets, because how would one know? It's not as obvious.
Exactly.
There was a big problem at this time, felt a little later. I mean, at first, the Japanese, of course, are very much demonized, because they did, after all, have this attack. It was sort of sneaky, because the discussions were going on at the time to resolve problems. But the problem was is that most Americans couldn't tell Japanese from Chinese. And the Chinese were our friends.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had to tread very carefully on being outright just racist. Because, you know, we couldn't anger the Chinese. We needed the Chinese to work with us in this war. By the way, I should say it was on NBC's Blue Network that Winchell was on, which was the predecessor of ABC. When it spun off on the regular NBC stayed, had been the Red Network. They actually had two networks at the time, which was somewhat almost monopolistic, I think we can say, in any case. Let's take a look at a little message that came up about guarding against sabotage. I believe this one was from a Pittsburgh radio station, but all the stations were issuing the same announcement.
The War Department asks that all radio stations make the following announcement. The Secretary of War directs that all firms and manufacturing plants who have defense contracts or who are working on defense orders will at once institute proper measures against sabotage. Repeating that announcement. The Secretary of War directs that all firms and manufacturing plants who have defense contracts or who are working on defense orders will at once institute proper measures against sabotage.
That's an amazing piece of tape. Of course, the Japanese did have spies in the United States. And if one watches the History Channel or other things, you have these episodes which they're talking about, which they have Japanese spies on talking about what their job was during that time.
Yeah, well, Germans had spies in the U.S. too at that time. I mean, you know, and there was a lot of worry right on that there might be some serious problems. So the announcement went out. All the stations were asked to do that, as that announcement says. Another big worry was on the West Coast, because we knew or believed that there was Japanese ships heading toward the West Coast of America.
For a full-scale invasion.
Yes. So there was a considerable worry there. And, of course, there was a much larger Japanese population out on the West Coast. And there was also the concern, I think by this time they realized the Japanese had honed in on the Hawaii radio station, the Honolulu radio station's signal, about what to do about that. So here is something that comes from a radio station, KIRO, in Seattle, telling people that radio is going to be going off the air. They're all going to shut down, and other things that they needed to do.
In the first place, there will be no radio broadcasting tonight after 7 o'clock, except perhaps for one of the Seattle stations, which will probably be KIRO. Leave your dial tuned to KIRO, and you'll get the information that is necessary. There will be no programs broadcast, but any information necessary for the civilian populace will be broadcast over KIRO, probably. There will be a complete blackout tonight at 11 o'clock. That blackout is not only for the city of Seattle. It includes every light between the California border, or rather the Mexican border, and the Canadian border. That is in the states of Oregon, Washington, and California. Every farmhouse, every light of any kind in that area must be out by 11 o'clock. To test your blackout, you will have plenty of time between the hours of 7 and 11, between now and 11 o'clock to make arrangements to get heavy black paper to seal your windows or heavy drapes or something, and by going outside with your lights on, you can check before the hour set to see that you are completely blacked out. If you're unable to find materials and so forth to make your windows completely sealed so that no light will leak out, you must have your lights off. However, do not pull main switches. As we told you, ordinary window shades are not sufficient to black out your lights. Do not pull the main switches, however. Just use the switches on the in the rooms and on the lamps. No lights are to be used on automobiles, and no lights whatever are to be shown anywhere on the Pacific Coast, in the states of Oregon, Washington, and California, until 30 minutes after daylight. From 11 o'clock tonight until 30 minutes after daylight tomorrow morning.
Would have been nice having people driving around without their lights at night. Not exactly the safest situation. They were very concerned about a Japanese air attack and that they would be able to hone in on the Pacific Coast. I'm kind of intrigued by him saying that that station will be KIRO and that they will probably.
a little bit self-serving and hopeful.
Yeah, probably would have been. It was a major station out on the West Coast. That they would have done that. But it does show the kind of sort of fear that's coming across to a lot of people, especially on the West Coast, about what could happen, given the fact that the Japanese were able to get to Pearl Harbor and bomb it. They can get anywhere. So that, it was very scary times.
And it was a wake-up call, of course, that, you know, unlike anything that we had here, the thought of being attacked in the United States itself was just
separated by oceans on both sides. I mean, we seemed invulnerable in that sense. You know, once we took care of the British, we didn't worry too much about a foreign attack on the U.S., but they did here.